Good day, and welcome to the DAE Investor Relations conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Mr. Brendan O'Neill. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much. Good morning and good afternoon. My name is Brendan O'Neill, and I am the Vice President of Financial Reporting, Planning and Analysis. Welcome to the conference call to discuss DAE's results for the 3 months ended 31 March 2019. Our discussions in the call may include forward-looking statements, and we refer you to the disclaimer on slide 2 of the presentation, which talks about this in further detail. The call will be recorded and a replay will be available on our website. There will be two speakers today, Feroz Tarapore, our CEO, and Jennifer Creevy, our CFO. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. I will now hand you over to Feroz, our CEO, to provide an overview of our performance.
Great, thanks Brendan, and welcome everybody to our first quarter 2019 earnings call. Like we've done on previous occasions, I'm going to make a few kind of overall comments using page 3 of the presentation as the backdrop, and then we will hand it over to Jennifer for a review of the numbers, and then we'll come back at the end for Q&A. So let me just start off by saying that from a portfolio perspective, this was a very steady quarter. Our own managed committed portfolio count stands at 354, coincidentally the exact same number that we had at the end of the year 2018. But within that, the managed component is up as we novated all of the Kestrel ABS assets from the owned side to the managed side. And whilst we're on Kestrel, I should note that our AIS business, which is our third-party asset management business, is growing really nicely. And with this transaction, assets under management in the AIS side of our business are now up to $1.2 billion. As some or all of you may remember, our overall target in that particular segment is $5 billion. So we're very steadily making our progress towards our stated number. You should expect kind of good developments in the remainder of 2019 in that particular business as well. All of the other metrics, whether it's diversification either by fleet type or by region, customer count numbers, fleet age, et cetera, by and large kind of unchanged during the quarter. And the financial performance, as Jennifer will walk us through shortly, again, I think pretty solid performance during the quarter. On the balance sheet, I want to make three observations. One, our assets declined a little bit, mostly attributable to the fact that we migrated the Kestrel assets, that I described earlier. Two, there was a corresponding decline in loans and borrowings as well as we paid down debt from those transactions. And on that note, I should state that we repurchased $86 million of our bonds, all of it very, very early in the year when prices were materially different and lower than they are now. And lastly, I'd like to say that we've kept our leverage metric, which is net debt to equity, steady at just below 2.6. And just as a reminder, our target on that front is to be south of 3 times. And we kept that leverage steady by returning capital that was excess during the quarter as all of these asset sales came through and origination opportunities were what they were. And we also reduced the shareholder loan at the same time. So from our perspective, this was a cash-free transaction that kept the leverage constant and reduced the one asset that some of you have told us in the past that we'd rather not have on the balance sheet. So I think from our standpoint, this is a very good development where we were able to accomplish kind of multiple objectives at the same time. First quarter also marks the quarter in which we made further improvement in our unsecured funding percentage. So for those of you who've been with us for a while, you will note that we consciously stated that we were increasing our number of percentage of unsecured funding to a number that quantitatively gets us into the investment grade category, and we've accomplished that in the first quarter. So on the metric that one agency uses, which is unsecured funding to total funding, we're now at 54%, and the threshold there was a minimum of 50. And on the other metric, which is secured debt to assets, where the threshold is to be below 30, we've now done that, and we're now at, I think, 28 or something like this. Jennifer will walk us through the exact trend and the numbers. And that now prepares us to have the right discussion with the agencies, because our franchise is strong, our profitability is strong, and we've ticked off the last quantitative thing that we needed to tick off as well. Now, before I hand it over to Jennifer, I wanted to just make a couple of comments on the market environment as we see it. First, I want to say that the market for asset sales remains extremely healthy as this asset class moves from being an exotic asset class, I would say 5 or 6 years ago, to more a mainstream asset where liquidity looks at this asset now on a regular basis, and the inflow, I think most of you can see in there, and we think that that's still sort of an external liquidity event or a market dislocation event. I think that continues to hold up in the future here. The sale leaseback market remains competitive but is not reaching for new lows. And participants, including us, are adjusting to this new structural levels by tweaking parts of our business model that we need to tweak so that we can make predictable returns on a going forward basis. So I think that's encouraging. You know, could it be better? Yes. Pricing for new technology narrow body assets, I think, still continues to confound us. And principally what we see in the secondary market is monetization of the lease cash flows more than kind of the recognition of the asset value that's underlying in that particular asset relative to the current technology asset. And that, you know, can't continue forever. And we think that this is kind of a 2-year forward flashing amber signal as today's lease levels flow through to trading in a couple of years' time, there's going to be some dislocation ahead. On the OEM side, I should say that we are not any closer to placing an order with them for new narrow-body aircraft. And these days, I think we kind of look heavenward and thank somebody up there for putting us in this particular position as we continue to find an incredible mismatch between the price that these assets are delivering at today and the lease rentals available in the marketplace. And lastly, one comment on the MAX. We have 4 MAX on lease to a very strong operator. We have none on order, and we have no commitment in any sale leaseback transaction to buy any. So I think this is a pretty small non-event for us. And we watch with interest and really wish Boeing well in their efforts not just to restore the aircraft back to flight, but really restore the public's trust in this particular asset. And we think that that is a taller hill that they have to climb. And we wish them well, because the sooner they can fix all that, the sooner we can go back to, we as an industry can go back to kind of putting this behind us appropriately and conducting our business. So let me stop at that level. Happy to expand on that during Q&A later. And let me turn it over to Jennifer.
Thank you, Prez. Slide 4 provides a more detailed analysis of our fleet. At the end of Q1 2019, the total fleet was 354 aircraft, which consisted of 301 owned aircraft, 52 managed aircraft, and 1 committed aircraft, with a total fleet value of $12.8 billion. During the first quarter, we purchased 6 aircraft and sold 17 aircraft. Our fleet is split between 85% passenger and 15% of freighter based on net book value. And our split across the OEMs is 41% Airbus, 52% Boeing, and 7% ATRs. At the end of March 2019, our average fleet age was 6.1 years, and our average remaining lease term was 6.2 years. Moving to slide 5, which shows an analysis of our customers in further detail. On a regional basis, we have 43% of our fleet in EASA, with Asia Pacific at 27%, Europe at 17%, and Americas at 13%. And in line with year-end, our largest customer is Emirates at 15% of net book value, followed by Gulf Air, which is now our second largest customer, at 8% based on net book value. Moving to slide 6, which shows our income statement for the 3 months to the end of 31 March 2019 compared to the same period in 2018. Profit for the period was $99 million compared to $96 million in Q1 last year. The primary reason for this increase year on year was due to an increase in the gain on disposal of aircraft in 2019 compared to Q1 2018, and this is somewhat offset by increased finance costs. Profit before tax was in line with the same quarter as last year at $109.7 million, and this gave us a pre-tax profit margin of 30.47%. Our adjusted EBITDA was $349.4 million at the end of Q1 compared to $315 million last year. And this gives an adjusted EBITDA margin of 97%, which is up from 94% at year end. Moving to slide 7. Our revenue has increased to $360 million in Q1 2019 compared to $352.4 million in the prior year. This was primarily due to increased revenue from our Jeramco, our maintenance facility, which increased to $23.4 million, up from $16.2 million in the same quarter last year. Total lease revenue decreased slightly to $332.6 million due to increased bad debt provisions in the quarter, higher amortization costs and lower maintenance revenue compared to the same period last year. 91% of our lease revenue is fixed, and our top five customers represent 31% based on lease revenue. We also had gains on disposal of aircraft of $28.6 million in Q1 2019, and this gain relates to the sale of 17 aircraft, 16 of which were sold to our managed fleet, the Kestrel portfolio, and were held for sale at year end. The average age of the aircraft sold was 9 years. And these aircraft primarily moved to our managed portfolio, which now stands at 52 aircraft at the end of Q1. Revenue from the economic closing date for the aircraft sold in Q1 2019 was $11.7 million. Moving to slide 8. Overall expenses for Q1 were $181.7 million compared to $176 million in the prior period, an increase of 3%. The main increase within expenses was cost of providing engineering services, which has increased in line with the increased revenue we saw from Jeramco on the earlier slide. General and admin costs have decreased to $20.8 million in Q1 compared to $23.3 million in the prior period due to ongoing cost-saving exercises within the business. And our SG&A as a percentage of revenue is 6% in line with the percentage at year-end. Our net finance costs have increased in Q1 2019 to $97.2 million. And this is due primarily to lower finance income in this quarter, as there was a positive movement in the fair value of derivatives in Q1 2018 of over $16 million. All movements in the fair value of derivatives are now shown in other comprehensive income from 2019. There were also higher finance expenses in the quarter due to the acceleration of the amortization of loan fees after the early repayment of certain loans in the first quarter. You will have noted that our debt has gone down to $8.8 billion at the end of Q1. The average cost of debt is now 4.5%. Moving now to slide 9 and looking at our funding and liquidity in further detail. The graphs show the quarterly trend over the last 6 quarters. Total loans and borrowings have decreased to $8.8 billion, down from $9.3 billion at year-end. And this reduction is primarily due to the additional repayment of secured debt. Our total available liquidity, which includes our undrawn revolving credit facilities and cash on hand, was $1.2 billion at the end of Q1 2019. Our unsecured debt as a percentage of total debt increased to 54%, up from 46% at year-end. And this is in line with our stated objective to increase the level of unsecured debt in the company. The number of unencumbered aircraft increased to 158 aircraft, with a value of $5.77 billion. As a consequence of this, our secure debt has fallen, and as a percentage of total assets, it now stands at 29% at the end of Q1 2019, down from 34% at year-end. Turning to our balance sheet in further detail on slide 10. Total assets for the group were $14 billion at the end of March 2019. Total equity was $3.4 billion, down from $3.5 billion at year-end, and this relates to the comment that Feroz made on the repurchase of our shares in the quarter of $250 million. Our pre-tax return on equity is 12.8% at the end of Q1, which is in line with year-end. And as previously mentioned, our net debt to equity now stands at 2.56 at the end of Q1, which again is in line with year end. This gives DAE a very strong balance sheet going forward into the rest of 2019. I will now hand back to Feroz for any final comments.
Okay, thanks, Jennifer. I think we can just open it up for Q&A to the extent somebody has a question.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure that your mute function is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, please press star 1 to ask a question. We'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. We'll take our first question today from Rodney Charles from JP Morgan. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Good afternoon. Is it possible to give us 12-month guidance on where you expect to end the year with regards to the ratio of unencumbered assets to unsecured debt?
Okay, let's give it a shot. Today, that number is about 120%. And that is at unsecured debt as a percentage of total debt of 54%. I would say that the guidance here would be that if we keep this kind of number, 54%, that 120 will inch up a little bit. But if we take that 54 up to, say, 60, the trajectory of that inching up will kind of accelerate a little bit. And I think that's the most we can guide you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question now comes from Reno Bianchi from Cantor Fitzgerald. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning and good afternoon. A few questions. Can you please walk me through the $250 million share buyback the way that has been reported? I mean, there is no trace on the cash flow statement, I assume, because it's been accounted as that. But anyway, we'll be clarified if you could please walk me through exactly how that transaction was accounted.
As I said before, it was a non-cash transaction where, or effectively a net non-cash transaction where we repurchased $250 million worth of common stock, and the shareholders repaid $250 million worth of the shareholder loan. So that's. I'm not sure there's anything more to it than that.
So it did not clear to the cash flow statement, I guess. It was a wash?
Exactly. Correct.
Thank you very much. Second question. I think we talked the last time, but, you know, I can't fail to notice that exposure to Middle East and Africa is about 43%. At the end of the first quarter, was about 26% at the end of 2017. And, you know, when you look at the top 10 account exposure to what I define largely Middle East airline is 28%, up to 26% at the end of the year. I believe that some additional exposure must have been incurred to Gulf Air during the quarter. But me as a maid, I'm trying to get a sense of, you know, how far are we going to expose geographical exposure to Middle East African and to top players, top Middle East airline players?
Okay, fair question. The way we look at it is, again, by individual transaction. Let me just make one more comment before we specifically go into the numbers. When we report MIASA, that includes South Asia, which is about 7%. So the Middle East Africa number is 7% lower than what you see. And the reason it is at 43% is that we delivered six extremely well-priced 787-9 assets to a new operator, Gulf Air, in Bahrain. So, again, we look at it name by name, individual by individual credit by individual credit. And from our standpoint, I think that's kind of the way we're going to continue to look at it, not necessarily that it's in the Middle East or anywhere else, but whether the risk parameters are correct and the returns for those risk parameters are indeed correct for us. Having said that, as we look at the opportunity set itself, it's hard for us to figure out kind of how that number is going to go much higher than this, and we don't necessarily need it to go higher either.
Thank you. Last question. I never had an opportunity to ask. Maybe I can find to some of the people that provide the fleet. But anyway, your geographical exposure to the Americas is around 13%, at least directionally. Is that mostly South America versus North America? Can you give me a little bit of color so what that 13% is made of?
Yeah, the U.S. is actually a pretty small number for us. And so for us, that is Canada and everything else in there, so Central, Latin, South America, and the U.S. is a smaller, kind of very small piece of that puzzle.
From your comment, it seems like Canada is a is an appreciable component of that exposure.
Well, we have quite a few airlines in Canada as our customers. And so it's a good number. I'm not sure that it's a massive number, but it's a we like our exposure in Canada.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Reno.
Thank you. As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question at this time, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll take our next question now from Daniel Sherry from Lowe's Corporation. Please go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking the time to answer questions. Just wondering if you have any updated thoughts on just kind of given the financing and sort of like rating conditions for peers that we've seen over the past quarter, if that has changed your thinking at all on the pace with which you might want to try to make the balance sheet sort of look the way you want it to look longer term?
Yeah, so I think the balance sheet now, by and large, is very close to what we want it to look like longer term, unlike the very dramatic shift that we did in 2018 to our capital structure, where, in effect, the cost of secured debt that we paid down was actually lower than the cost that we incurred in taking on new unsecured debt. So that was a no-cost transaction. That's less and less now the case. So I think we, given our business requirements and given this economic reality, we are going to approach it in a very kind of thoughtful, methodical way as opposed to any one-time acceleration for just financial reasons.
Okay, understood. Thanks.
Thanks, Daniel.
Thank you. As a final reminder, if you do have a question, please signal by pressing star 1. It appears we have no further questions at this time. I'd like to turn the conference back over to you, Mr. O'Neill, for any additional or closing remarks.
I think I'll hand it over to Feroz for any final remarks.
Okay. Listen, guys, thank you so much for taking the time to join us. If you have anything else, you know where to reach us, and have a great day.
Thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you. That will conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect.